The influence of great thinkers like Socrates, Aristotle, Plato, Newton, far exceeds that of great conquerors as Julius Caesar, Alexander the Great, or any other. Interesting, huh? Mm-hmm. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, here in Campo, California, bringing you instant inspiration directly from directly from the campus. So, here we go. The influence of great thinkers like Socrates, Aristotle, Plato, Newton, far exceed that of the great conquerors such as Julius Caesar, Alexander the Great, or any others. Now, we know about Alexander the Great and Julius Caesar. We know of the great empires that they have built. We know how they went around the world and claimed everything for the Roman Empire, and how they were very successful, and how they brought education to people all around the world, their education. They brought religion to the people, their religion. In fact, there are many religions. And they brought many things to people around the world and caused many things to happen. However, what they didn't do was to cause the people to think. By and large, they allowed the people to remain with their own religions and their own languages and so forth, because that would have been quite a job, having them all learn another language. So they just learned the language of the people and worked with them. People like Socrates, Aristotle, Plato, Newton, and great thinkers, they taught people to think. And because they taught people to think, people started looking at the world differently. They didn't look at the world as something to possess, something to own, something to control, manipulate, judge. They looked at the world as something to delight in, something to enjoy the varieties and the many attitudes that the world, languages and cultures all had to offer. And so, as Socrates and all the other philosophers did, they taught people, what do you think about it? What do you think about that? Now, this evening for supper, we had some sort of
ravioli.
We had some sort of stuff from Thailand.
Pasta.
And the Thailand seaweed was in there. And it was a seaweed taste that I had never had before. And I found it most unusual. It was not something that charmed me. I'm sure the Thailand people would say I should say that it did. But it didn't. And so I tasted it. I ate one or two pieces, not knowing what it was. And I asked Ingeborg, in all innocence, what's in there? And Ingeborg said, vegetables, in all innocence. And I said, kind of strange vegetables. Where do they come from? And she said, Thailand. And then as we looked further, we investigated and we thought, surely it must be seaweed, because no vegetables we've ever tasted quite like that. But yet, if we were to try these things out, experiment with these things, if we were to have them under different auspices, we would learn to expand our cultural area, our cultural awareness. What do the cities in America have? The cities in America are multicultural. If you want a Thai restaurant, if you want a Chinese restaurant, if you want a Greek restaurant, if you want an Italian restaurant, no matter what type of restaurant virtually you want, they're there. All over the place, especially the Italians. There's always lots of Italian restaurants and lots of pizza houses. And there are a lot of German places too, but all of these varieties. Now, do you go there? You may go there once or twice, trying out the cuisine to see what it tastes like. But generally speaking, you don't go back. And the reason you don't go back is because it has an unusual flavor. It's not totally satisfying. It's okay, but it's not totally satisfying. When we grow up as children, if we were growing up in that culture, we would be eating those foods, and that would be our regular fare, and we'd be quite familiar with them, and we would say, oh, mother makes it like that, you know. But since it wasn't our normal thing, we didn't think mother makes it like that. When we are learning to be thinkers, learning to be people who do not judge on appearances, but investigate and understand the reasonings behind things, we come up with all sorts of attitudes that make us more noble citizens as human beings. Here at the University of Healing, we have an unusual school. We teach people not to learn to enjoy the cuisine of other countries. We don't teach people to travel the world and enjoy all the diversity of cultures. We don't teach people to learn to like things. We teach people to like themselves and have fun. Now, that sounds very egoistic, and in a manner of speaking, it is egoistic, but in a very positive and good way. When you like yourself, you don't have to go out looking for new thrills. You go out and you enjoy the world that you find around you, and if you happen to get aboard somebody's boat, and they happen to be Chinese sailors, and they show you different techniques of sailing that they use, you say, hey, cool, that's neat. But you don't go searching it out. Because when you are a thinker, when you are a mind that is open to the world about you and you create the experiences for yourself, you create the experiences for yourself. Now, would you like to create the experience for yourself of being on a galley? Now, a galley, often called a slave galley, is what the early seamen used, and they would have 50 to 100 men chained to their seats and pulling on oars to make the boat go across the Mediterranean or wherever it went. Now, that's not a very pleasant way to do. Can you imagine having to go to the bathroom? Can you imagine having to eat and being chained up? Can you imagine what your hands would be on your first few days or first few weeks of this? I mean, they'd be raw as could be. Can you imagine sitting in the sun? I mean, they must have been burned to a crisp. But you never hear about those things. You never hear about those things. Hey, we hear about the galley slaves, were not the galley slaves, but we hear about the slaves coming across the Atlantic Ocean from Africa, who were sold into slavery by their neighbors and their family. And they too came over, but they were not out in the sun. And many of them, well, I would say maybe a third of them died or better because of sanitation and because of the lack of water and other food, you know. So when they finally got to America, they maintained their same thing. Now, what do Africans do when they come to America? They look for African stores. What do Greeks do? They look for Greek stores, Greek restaurants, Greek everything. What do Italians do? My goodness, they look for Italian things and Italian girls, and Italian boys. They are interested in their own area. And what do people do from Japan? My goodness, they cluster. Wherever you find one person from Japan, you'll find a whole community. And the same with the Koreans. The Koreans come over here and they cluster, which is not a bad thing to do. And so they have their diet, which they're familiar with. And Korean stores open up to service them, to sell them the foods that they want to have. And then they go to their schools and they have the school teach them in Korean, even though they should be learning English. But the Koreans, I must say, are probably a little more unique or anyhow, they're fantastic because they will make themselves learn a language. They will make themselves learn a trade, operating a store as a family or whatever. And within 2 or 3 years, they own the store. They own their house. Their family is all going to nice schools. You know, the children are all being put in the best school they can be put into. And the family, because they all work together. They don't work separately. And working together, they can take all their profits and turn it over to maintaining the family. Now, the early great rulers like Julius Caesar and Alexander the Great, their primary interest was in gaining the land, gaining the people, control, manipulation. they were not very interested in teaching them and educating them, although they did that to a degree. But the great philosophers, such as Socrates, Plato, and what have you, they were interested in teaching the people. What was it that Aristotle was known for? Do any of you know? And I'm talking about a particular thing that he contributed to his society.
Well, his collections.
Of what?
Of animals.
His
biology.
Zoo and museum and so to speak like that, yeah. And because he brought to his home all the strange animals of the world and all the strange plants of the world, and he allowed people to come and see them and know what they were and be educated thereby. It was quite fantastic. And what's another thing that Aristotle is extremely well known for? He's extremely well known for mathematics. He was one of the early great mathematicians.
Sure.
Now, these great thinkers, their contribution far exceeds anything that the great rulers have done. You all heard of Hitler? Well, Hitler was living in Germany after he left Austria. And in Germany, he tried to get the people all together, and he did. And the people all got together. And then he tried to say to the people, we are the great race, let's take all the nations of the world and put them under our wing, you know, we'll take care of them. And so he proceeded to try to do that. And in proceeding to try to do that, he lost. And when he lost, what happened? Basically, by all the world, he was forgotten. He was forgotten. And the wonderful things he did do were forgotten, and the bad things he did do were forgotten too. Now, there are people whose families and whose worlds have been tormented by what he had done, and to this day, over 50 years later, they're still seeking redress, and the original participants are long since gone. But you have to let the past be past and move on in the present. And this is what philosophers teach you to do. They teach you to let go of the past. They teach you to claim the present moment and live in it vitally and dynamically and wonderfully. It's not to say that what Hitler and his crew did should not be somehow redressed, but that it be 50 years later as hot an issue in the minds of some people now as it was then. And now it's even more than 50 years, because you start with about 1938, 39, 40. So 40 to here is how many years? Going on 60 already.
64.
Yeah. Our little girl here was born that year. So 64 years. Now, we had the Hundred Year War. We had many other great things going on. And by the time the war ends, people forgot what started it. And this is what happens. But in philosophy, that doesn't happen. In philosophy, you always have your dream. Who am I? What am I doing here on earth? Where am I going? What are my values? What is the thing that pleases me the most? What is I really want to do? And also, we'll throw this in just as a little sidebar. People say they would like to live forever in a perfect body. And nobody will ever have a perfect body. The reason you'll never have a perfect body is you feed it with imperfect thoughts. Now, the moment you stop feeding your body with imperfect thoughts, your body will be perfect, but you won't know that you have a perfect body. Not because you don't feel better, but because it'll be the most natural thing in the world. And this is what we here at the University of Healing teach to all of our students. It's the most natural thing in the world to think beautiful thoughts about yourself, to love yourself, to be number one, to be fantastic. This is what it's all about. And on that note, I will say, Have a lovely evening, and know that I love you, I love you, I love you.